Talion gave a slow nod. Back to the ruined shades, then. Wouldn't they be harmless if nothing is controlling them presently?
No. They most likely still have a persistent instruction to kill or take over anyone they see. That order will continue until something changes it.
Lydia raised a hand to her lips. She had an expression of deep contemplation. Talion raised an eyebrow at her.
You're plotting something.
She raised a hand to her chest in mock offense.
Plotting? Me? You're mistaking me for Kestrian, I think.
Talion snorted.
You were doing plenty of plotting on your own back in Orlan, long before he got involved. But that's not an insult. I may prefer the more direct approach, but I can still respect using strategy. What are you thinking?
Please don't do anything foolish,
Rin pleaded.
We do not want another Vac outbreak. That wouldn't be good for anyone.
Lydia shook her head.
No, nothing like that. Merely considering possibilities.
Rin folded her arms.
Just don't let them out of the barrier.
Lydia nodded absently.
Of course. Now, how do we detect them? I imagine that the Vec taint would not have been an issue if they're visible under ordinary conditions.
Rin nodded.
Yup. They're invisible to normal sight. I have the ability to sense shades and spirits, and it seems like Sal has been acquiring something like it. But you'll need to have detection spells active.
Or just use Ulander's ghost lantern.
Talion patted his backpack.
If they're spiritual entities, it should work, correct?
That's not exactly right. They're shades, which refers to a different plane. But they do have spiritual energy. The lantern might work.
Rin nodded.
We should use it. It won't hurt to try. I can detect them without it and warn us. But Lydia? Hmm?
Lydia was still wearing a thoughtful expression.
Please, don't let them out of the barrier.
Lydia sighed.
Fine. I just haven't had a chance for field work in some time, and I was getting a bit excited. I will be cautious. If nothing else, this resource will be likely to remain here for future study, long after we're done. I'm not sure I like the sound of that either, but we'll talk about it another time. I'm going to try to make us invisible to them when we arrive, but just in case, be ready to fight.
A smile crossed Talion's face. Always. Hours passed before they reached the barrier. Talion spent a little bit of time chatting with Lydia as they walked, but he remained nervous about the shadows trailing them. That also limited the scope of what they could discuss. Rin and Lydia spent some time discussing sorcerer's theory, as well as varying categories and classifications of runeshades and Vec. Talion contented himself with anticipating the possibility of fighting a tremendous number of highly dangerous monsters, which he hadn't had a chance to do in a while. The barrier itself was much more visually impressive than he'd expected. He'd been picturing some sort of ritual markings etched on the ground and a subtle field that couldn't be crossed by spiritual entities. The actual barrier was a glowing dome of translucent blue energy that seemed to stretch for miles. He caught sight of the glimmer in the distance long before he approached, but seeing it up close was nothing short of awe-inspiring. The power that it must have taken to weave something like this. He ducked down to the ground, searching for the telltale markings of enchantment runes like those on Velthrin's city walls. He found nothing of the sort. How has this stayed intact for so long? He wondered aloud. Are there objects generating or securing it? Lydia approached, leaning heavily on her cane as she settled next to him.
You're not usually so interested in such things. Aw, are you interested because your mommy made it?
Rin poked him in the side.
You're adorable.
Talion groaned. She wasn't entirely wrong, but he certainly wasn't going to admit that.
I'm interested because of the scale. I could see someone like Hardigan or Taran managing something of this size for an instant, but how is it still here? Spells naturally disperse over time. I don't have to be a scholar to know that something is off about this.
Lydia winced as she knelt down, pressing a hand against the forest floor and whispering a few words. She'd apparently broken her habit for long, loud incantations.
You're correct, Talion. There's an intense concentration of essence underground in this area, but it's too deep for me to get any significant information. I can also sense that it's connected to something within the barrier, but I can't discern any details. The barrier itself is blocking me.
Talion nodded, then offered Lydia a hand to get back to her feet. She accepted it without complaint.
You two need a few minutes to catch your breath before we go in there,
Rin asked. Talion shook his head.
Lydia took a breath.
Just a few moments, if you please. I confess I haven't walked this distance in some time.
Talion gave her a worried look, but she shook her head.
I'll be fine. Just give me a few more moments.
She leaned up against a nearby tree. Talion gazed beyond the barrier, looking in at the strange, bleached white trees and grass within. He could see the powder that Rin discussed in the air. It looked almost like snow. They rested for a few minutes before Lydia finally pulled herself away from the tree, walking to the side of the barrier.
I am ready.
Talion came over next, resting his hand on his hilt.
Should I open it up then?
Whoa, whoa, slow down there, Mr. Swordy.
Rin put a hand on his arm.
You probably could cut through this, but it's a bad idea. Ritual backlash. And you might end up collapsing the whole thing. We don't want that.
Talion moved his hand away.
What's the plan then? Dig a hole?
Rin wrinkled her nose.
That might work, but I'd really rather not. No, we'll sorcery it right open. I was planning to do it myself, but with Miss Hastings here, it'll be even easier. Protection sorceress, yeah?
Lydia winced, then nodded.
Not as much as I used to be, but yes. I believe I could reshape a section of the barrier to make a temporary hole, if that's your intention.
Good. Be ready to open her up. First, protective measures. We don't want to breathe whatever is in there.
Rin reached into a bag at her side.
Retrieve purification elixir.
A bottle appeared in her hand, and she handed it to Talion. Then she repeated the process twice more, handing a bottle to Lydia and holding one herself.
Drink up. These will help if we do end up inhaling anything from in there, or if any poisonous monsters attack us. They're not foolproof, but we're not going in there unprotected.
Talion nodded, popping open the blue-green vial and downing it. It tasted like blueberries, far from the worst strange elixir he'd tasted over the years. It brought back a memory of an old alchemist friend, one he'd hurt. But he brushed that memory aside to focus. The other two downed their elixirs.
Okay, get close, Rin instructed,
and the other two followed her instructions.
Spirit art, 8-part barrier.
A shimmering field surrounded the group in the shape of an 8-sided polyhedron, which glimmered and rotated around them.
This'll hold up against most spiritual threats, including shades. I'm going to have to expend a considerable amount of energy to maintain it, however.
Rin took a breath.
Lydia, if you have any protection spells of your own...
Lydia nodded.
Redundancy is important. Your spell seems similar to a sphere of exclusion, so I won't make another. I'll make an individual barrier for each of us, in case something gets through your field.
As Lydia tapped each of them and generated a field of glimmering energy of her own, Talion raised a finger.
Problem. You do remember that my aura destroys protection spells, right?
Ah, that's... awkward,
Rin admitted.
That's gonna make this more difficult. We'll have limited time to work with.
Should I wait here?
Talion asked.
No, there's a good chance we'll need muscle in there. We're just going to have to hurry.
Rin waved to Lydia.
Open the barrier up if you would.
Lydia nodded, approaching the titanic divine shield.
I hope we don't regret this.
Don't be such a worrier, Lydia.
Rin grinned.
If things go badly, I'm sure none of us will live long enough to regret anything.
And on that note, Lydia waved a hand at the barrier, opening a hole in the field. Talion's hand rested on his sword as the trio walked inside. The first thing that struck Talion was the cold. The sorcerer's barriers that wrapped around the group did little to shelter them from the oppressive chill of the air and the wind that whipped against their skin. Fortunately, the snow-like powder stopped as soon as it blew against the rotating panes of Rin's shield. At least he didn't have to worry about inhaling some kind of death pollen. As long as the barrier held, anyway. Lydia tossed a pebble out of Rin's barrier, frowning as it flashed blue, then green. Talion raised an eyebrow but kept walking. There was a clear path ahead, one unobstructed by debris, even after what should have been centuries of disuse. That was suspicious, but there were few ideas Talion hated more than breathing in death pollen, so he headed straight down the path. As he walked, he unslung his backpack and opened it and reached inside, withdrawing a lantern. Then, after fastening his backpack back on, he closed his eyes and concentrated a spark of his essence into the device. The crystal in the center of the device flickered, then brightened, shedding a gray-white illumination around the group. The light was heatless, giving it an unnatural feel, but it served two important functions. First, it staved off the growing darkness of the wood, allowing them to see as they walked beyond sight of the shimmering blue barrier. And second, with the lantern active, Talion could more clearly perceive the shadowy figures that were beginning to amass among the nearby trees. They were wispy figments of darkness, human-shaped, but elongated and disproportionate. While at first, he might have assumed the skewed proportions were a reaction to the light, much like a traditional shadow. More careful observation showed that some digits remained skewed regardless of the angle or intensity of the light shining upon them. Fingers and toes stretched and curved, seeming to end in vicious points. In simpler terms, the shadows had claws. Lydia took a step back after the lantern first illuminated them, drawing in a sharp breath.
"They're everywhere. Just keep walking," Rin advised. "They're not likely to bother us if we don't bother them."
"Why?" Talion asked. "Aren't they supposed to kill and possess humans?"
"My barrier is keeping them from sensing us properly. As long as it holds, they can probably tell something is here, but they can't sense what it is. It's like we're holding up a sheet in front of ourselves, and they're not smart enough to know what is on the other side."
Talion took an uneasy breath. "Given my previous experiences, the barrier is probably going to break at the worst possible time. Then it's death pollen and ruined shades for everyone."
He kept his other hand floating by the Sekes on his hip, just in case. The shadows were utterly silent as they followed the group, but as they moved deeper into the woods, Talion could hear sound up ahead. It wasn't the simple noise of a surviving animal or monster, though. It was the unmistakable cadence of a mournful song. The words were in a foreign tongue, one Talion had never heard spoken. But as the song carried through the woods, he felt something within them. A weight, like the burden of a lost world, was carried within those sounds.
"Come to me, sing with me, you're too far away."
Talion's eyes scanned the woods, searching for the source. He still couldn't understand the words, but he could feel the intent behind them.
"It's a compulsion spell," Lydia hissed. "They're using dream sorcery to send messages directly into our minds. Try to ignore it. It's subtle enough that our barriers aren't stopping it."
"Can you do something about it?" Talion asked.
"It occurs too quickly for me to reshape the individual messages and stop them. I could make a barrier that's completely impermeable to sorcery, but it wouldn't let anything else in either, like sound or air. I can do that if it grows urgent, but we'll gradually suffocate, and we wouldn't be able to hear each other talk."
"Right. Lovely. Are we heading toward the creepy singing voice?"
Lydia nodded.
"Yes, I believe the crystal is in that direction."
"Good, good," Talion sighed. "Only thing I like more than death pollen forests are singing death pollen forests."
"Don't forget Frozen," Rin added. "Frozen singing death pollen forest."
"Right. How could I miss the most important part?"
They walked on, the voice growing stronger by the minute.
"Come to me. Sing with me. Sing the end of days."
"I don't like it,"
Rin's expression darkened.
"I mean, I've heard worse. She sounds like she might be a bit out of practice, but..."
"Not the quality of the creepy death song, Sal. There shouldn't be anything here alive enough to sing like that. And ruined shades aren't exactly known for their musical genius."
"Hey, maybe one of them has been practicing. They've had centuries to do it, and everyone needs a hobby."
That didn't seem to cheer Rin up any. Instead, as he watched, the irises of her eyes seemed to twist briefly and change in shape from circles to a multifaceted polyhedron.
Rin winced, blinked, and then her eyes went back to normal.
"Hmm?
What exactly?" "Duck!"
Talion ducked just in time to avoid a spear of ice that lanced out from the darkness ahead of them. His sword was in his hand a moment later, the destructive essence around the Sekes making a tearing noise as it crackled against the barriers around them. He heard what sounded like a giggle from the forest ahead.
"Come on, come closer, just a little bit further."
"Okay, nope, done with games."
Talion walked ahead of the group.
"Can you hear me, singer? You want to talk, you come to us. No more bewitching music, no more cowardly attacks from the shadows."
The music stopped in an instant,
cowardly, is it?
The temperature around them dropped rapidly.
A game, was it?
Talion heard a crack as the trees around them froze. Then a moment later, the ones closest to them shattered like glass.
Sal, I think you might have upset her.
Yeah, thinking that might be the case, Rin, thanks.
His grip on the Sakes tightened. But I'm absolutely done with subtlety and tricks. That's never been my style, and I'm tired of it. Sometimes when you're in an evil forest, there's only one thing to do about it.
Burn.
A burst of flame emanated from his right hand, surging up and mingling with aura around the Sakes. As the auras intermingled, the destructive aura shifted, taking on the properties of the flame. His sword blazed with silver fire as he walked forward.
You want to sing? Fine. Come sing with us. We're right here.
A white blur descended from the sky, crashing into the ground in the middle of the path ahead like a meteor. As the blur landed, the stone path froze and cracked on contact, and the air around it fell still.
You dare bring fire into my domain?
As the blur shifted closer, the wind itself seemed to freeze in its wake. It stopped a mere dozen feet away, solidifying into the form of a tall, blue-skinned woman. Her hair was a flowing sheet of ice, and her skin was translucent crystal, showing something white shimmering within. In her right hand, she held a halberd wrought from frost, and in her left hand, she held a gleaming blue crystal. Strange dark markings were visible on her forehead, a stark contrast to the brightness of the remainder of her form. She whipped her arm to the right, and a tendril of shadow erupted from it, lashing out into the shades that flanked the group. Where the shadow touched, the ruined shades changed, shifting in color to a blue-white and solidifying. Then she moved her hand to the left, shadow striking out again, but Talion was faster this time. He swung downward, a wave of flame shot forward, cutting the shadowy tendrils in two. The icy figure hissed, stepping back.
Go forward, my children. Dance. Break them.
The now solid shadows on the right side of the group began to slowly advance from the trees, lifting their frozen claws. Talion smiled for the first time in days.
Finally, something I can actually fight. This is better.
He took a few steps forward. I've got the big one. Handle the ice shadows.
Sal, love you, but no.
Rin stepped up next to him.
You're not fighting her by yourself.
Why not? I've got fire and she seems to hate that.
Rin raised a finger.
Yeah, that's good, but remember when I said that ruined shades could occasionally possess things other than humans?
The frozen woman floated closer, raising her halberd.
Sure.
Well,
Rin winced.
I'm pretty sure she's what happens when a ruined shade possesses a god.
Chapter 18, Lydia 6, Winter. Vendria gasped in Lydia's mind.
No, 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 she can't be here. Please be calm, Vendria. We are strong. We will handle this fight together. I don't...
Lydia couldn't focus on Vendria entirely. The frozen woman was striding forward and the icy shades had begun to circle them. Talion ignored Rin's warning and charged straight at the angry, possessed deity. This was, in Lydia's assessment, the least surprising thing that had happened in days. The goddess didn't bother moving. Instead, the air around Talion shimmered for an instant, then froze. In a moment, he was encased in a solid block of ice. Only then did the goddess raise her hand, pointing at Talion's chest. A glimmering blue field appeared around her finger, growing larger by the moment.
Talion!
Lydia dropped her cane, reaching for a belt pouch at her side. She didn't have long to panic. The ice around Talion cracked. A moment later, it shattered into a thousand shards. The goddess released her attack. A blast of focused darkness that seemed to warp the air around it. Talion cut the beam in half. The split blast streaked past him, careening into a nearby tree. The tree withered where it struck. In moments, it was naught but white dust. Talion glanced back, saw the effect of the beam, then turned back toward the goddess and let out an appreciative whistle.
Nice! Wouldn't want to be hit with that!
Next, he cracked his neck and stretched.
I can tell you're gonna be fun.
Rin grabbed his arm.
Don't antagonize her. She's just warming up.
Talion snorted at the pun.
Fine, fine. We'll end this quickly.
He took another step forward, and again his sword ignited with fire.
You want to go left, or...
Lydia finished opening her bag and emptied it out.
Wind, rise!
A burst of wind carried the dust inside the bag across the battlefield, and with her mind, she controlled where it moved. If Rin was right, she'd need to do some subtler work to ensure the fight went the way they wanted. Rin blurred forward, toward the left as Talion had indicated. She smashed a fist into the frozen woman's form, sending the goddess staggering back a step. A glyph flashed in the air on the impact, but Lydia didn't have a chance to identify the strange symbol. Talion rushed to the goddess's right, swinging the Sekes. The blade sliced through her halberd, then the center of her body, seemingly without resistance. She slid into two halves, and as the halves fell, her top half screamed. Her body vanished entirely, leaving Talion looking horrified.
That shouldn't have happened. I was restraining the cutting aura. I wouldn't have...
Lydia spun around, finding the goddess right behind her. She barely managed to put her arms up and think shield before a frozen blast slammed into her. Infectious permafrost, her comprehensive barrier reported. She let out a gasp as she processed that and noted the ice spreading further along the shield. She whipped a hand upward, blasting much of the ice clinging to the shield away with wind, but the few fragments remaining began to rapidly spread. Then the frozen shades were upon them. Rin jumped in front of Lydia, smashing one apart with a bare fist. Again, a glyph flashed in the air on impact. Her movements that followed were a blur that was too fast for Lydia to follow, with individual strikes annihilating frozen creatures without difficulty. Talion rushed straight back for the goddess. Again, his sword rose and fell, but this time she vanished before he even struck. She reappeared right behind him, stretching out an already glowing hand. He spun, but not in time. Lydia waved her hand. A gust of wind blasted Talion out of the way. That left the goddess to throw the blast of withering energy straight at Lydia instead. Her barrier, already half frozen, shattered the instant the beam came in contact with it. Accelerated decay, her barrier reported as it failed. Vendria's secondary shield flickered into existence just in time. The green shell-like structure seemed to hold better against the blast, but still began to crack almost immediately. It might have failed a moment later if the goddess wouldn't have stopped, tilting her head to the side in confusion.
You.
The voice that invaded Lydia's mind wasn't Vendria's. It was frigid and cold, withered and decayed, but it was almost the same. It was Vendria's voice that replied.
That's Lydia. She's...
Lydia's eyes shifted to the gemstone in the woman's hands, and she understood.
You're her winter aspect, aren't you? Venlyra, the cold of winter.
She stepped forward, reaching out a hand.
It's okay. We're not here to hurt you. We can...
Stop!
The world around them froze. Talion and Rin ceased to move, and the remaining shades froze along with them. The air, the wind, even the flames around Talion's sword stilled. Lydia couldn't move. She couldn't even breathe.
Give her to me.
In a moment, she felt her breath come surging back and she could move.
I'm so empty. I need her. I need to eat.
The others around her remained frozen, save for Venlyra. As Lydia watched, Venlyra slowly raised a hand in a beckoning gesture. Lydia glanced around, processing what she was seeing.
Is this time sorcery?
She knew such things existed, but she'd never seen anything like it in person. It was truly remarkable, a power on a scale she couldn't possibly resist on her own. But she wasn't alone. A silver layer of energy appeared around Rin. Then she snapped free of the spell effect.
Annoying!
Venlyra whipped her head toward Rin just in time to take a punch straight to the face. Her frozen body flew backwards, smashing into the ground and shattering to pieces. Then it flashed and vanished, gem and all. Talion took a breath, spinning around, holding his sword defensively.
What was that? It was like everything slowed and then...
No time to talk. Now she's starting to get irritated.
A frozen lance pierced Rin from behind without warning. Rin looked down, groaned, and snapped it in half. Blood flowed from the wound.
That's even more annoying.
She fell to her knees.
Rin!
Talion rushed over to her, his eyes searching the area for the attacker without any success. Lydia worked while Venlyra was gone.
Dreams, seek and bear my message,
she whispered. The sand she'd spread flickered in the air, seeking targets.
Shield!
A new barrier appeared around her.
She's not here,
Rin coughed, fingers going to the wound in her chest.
Those bodies we're fighting, they're just puppets.
The air around them grew colder.
You're wrong.
Another form of the goddess appeared, speaking out loud for the first time. Hundreds of blades and spikes of ice flew in circles around her, obscuring her body.
They are not puppets. They're pieces. Precious pieces of me.
Venlyra's visage shifted to a scowl.
And you broke them. You'll pay.
Talion didn't give her a chance to finish talking. He just swung the Sekhes and projected a cutting wave of fire in her direction. Her blades of ice flew in the way. A handful of them melted, but hundreds remained, and more began forming every moment. Dozens of them flashed toward Talion and Rin a moment later. Talion's blade moved in a flurry, his arms a blur beyond Lydia's ability to follow. His speed had increased vastly since she'd last seen him fight, but he still wasn't fast enough. Tiny fragments of ice slipped through his defense. Many broke harmlessly against the defensive spell that Lydia had placed on him, and others shattered against his reinforced skin. A few bits of ice glimmered brighter than the rest, leaving jagged cuts as they cut his skin like tiny knives. He grunted, concentrating, and flames burst from his skin. No further ice would harm him. It melted before he came close. She'd only seen him use that trick once before. It was an impressive technique, but one with a severe time limit. She'd have to work fast.
Eruvol Arshantaris!
The ring on Lydia's right hand flashed, and a ball of blue-white flame appeared. She hurled it toward the goddess. Frozen swords flew to intercept the spear. Lydia snapped her fingers.
Burst!
The sphere detonated in a thundering crack. Swords melted into rain, and the frozen air of the forest was momentarily replaced with a warm mist. The bottom half of Venlyra's body had been melted away for a moment. The ring's attack had been far stronger than she'd managed before. With Hardigan's training, she'd mastered it, preparing for a rematch with Sterling. It still hadn't been enough to destroy the goddess. But it wasn't meant to. It just needed to make an opening. As Venlyra raised a hand in the air to counterstrike, the ruined shades struck her from behind. Venlyra screamed and spun in confusion as phantasmal claws raked the remainder of her body. She flickered backward, appearing on the ground, still missing her lower half. A barrier appeared around her.
What have you?
The ruined shades pursued Venlyra, flying after her and clawing at her barrier. It held, but the goddess was struggling now. More ruined shades were emerging from the forest. Dozens. Hundreds of them. Every time Venlyra blasted one, three more seemed to descend from the sky or emerge from the ground beneath her. Venlyra howled, spinning toward Lydia.
You took my children!
The goddess raised her hands, darkness forming between them. Lydia recognized the spell as something similar to the withering beam she'd seen before, but this was on a much larger scale.
You'll wither and...
Rin surged forward from the ground, grabbing the goddess by the neck.
Stop!
Venlyra froze in place, her eyes wide. The sphere of blackness between her hands warbled dangerously. Talion made a running jump, swung the Sekhes, and sliced the sphere of darkness in half. Rin trembled.
The gem! No!
Talion spun and raised the Sekhes to strike.
No, wait!
Lydia rushed forward and put her hand on his arm.
It's her true...
Rin began, then broke into a cough. Venlyra slowly began to move again.
I know! Don't destroy her! I have a better answer!
Lydia stepped forward, releasing Talion and moving her hand to touch the blue gem.
Dominion of knowledge! Link our minds!
Interlude 2. Venlyra. Seasons. Venlyra remembered Rendalir. She remembered the frozen tops of mountain peaks, the hidden places far below the surface of the oceans, and the seemingly endless books of Ionel's libraries. Most of all, she remembered the cage. She remembered waking in a prison of silver bars tinged with red. All around it was a void, seemingly without end. She didn't remember how she'd gotten there, but she knew that something was wrong. There was a burning pain in her chest, and when she inspected it, she found the lingering traces of a wound, a scar that should have been impossible, for her body had been completely rebuilt as she changed to her current seasonal state. Worse, she remembered the cracks, the spiderweb-like veins of blackness spreading across her chest. It was a slow progression, but a horrifying one. She recognized it immediately. She clutched her hand to her chest.
No, no, no. This isn't happening.
She trembled in her prison, sucking in a breath.
Stop panicking. Solve. You're intact for now.
She balled her hands, but steeled herself. She was no powerless mortal to be consumed by a shade in mere moments. As long as she had her mind and her power, she could find a way forward. Ben Lyra closed her eyes. She was not a healer like her sister self of spring, but she counted water among one of her dominions. True, her efforts to heal the so-called Vectaint with water sorcery in the past had failed, but humans changed faster. She was more resilient, and she had ways of buying time to experiment further, didn't she? She was the winter. She could freeze anything in place, and affliction was no exception. That had to be the first step. She pressed a hand against the center of the spreading shadows and spoke.
Stop.
Nothing happened. No flash of power, no cessation of the progression of the shadow. Then pain shot through her body, seemingly striking every part of her at once.
You're awake, I see.
The voice was not one of sound. It was within the sharpness inside her body, digging into her very essence, and somehow it was also in the void beyond the cage. The infinite nothingness that stretched beyond even her comprehension. She shivered as she recognized the tone, not because she'd heard him speak before, but because every being on her world had been born with a primal fear of that voice. Mere gods were no exception. Ben Lyra trembled, but her eyes searched the void.
Sun Eater, what have you done to me?
You have been shown the price of resistance.
The pain surged through her again, agonizing. Rather than falling, however, she moved to the bars. When she gripped the silver-red metal, her hand burned. She didn't flinch away. She pulled with every bit of her might, because she understood that she was rapidly running out of time. If the Sun Eater was speaking to her, then the metal strained against her strength. She could not call extra power to empower her form as Venora had, but her body was still divinely forged. No mundane material could match her.
A worthy effort, but pointless. You would not survive exposure to the outside.
Very likely, she spoke aloud. But if you wanted me dead, I'd already be that way.
The first bar snapped. Brute force was rarely her preferred method of handling anything, but she had rapidly understood that sorcery would not avail her. Now when she couldn't reach the stars. Void was the bane of every sorcerer, mortal or deity. A sufficiently thick layer of void could prevent the use of any form of dominion sorcery. Spiritual arts and spells powered from internal essence could still be used, but those were not her areas of strength. Her opponent had known that, and he had placed her in a situation that would be nearly impossible to work around.
You want me in your service, a mindless puppet fulfilling your will. Death is preferable to such an existence.
You are wrong.
His voice was agony, spreading like fire inside her veins. She would not scream, however. She would not fail. She was working and would not be interrupted. She tore another bar from the cage.
You were born from the stars, a child of one of my compatriots. While Rendelier must end, you needn't end with it. You may join me in building a new world, a grander experiment. I will allow you to retain your sense of self.
Ben Lyra shook her head.
My role is to preserve, to guide, and even if it was not, I value the world that exists. I have seen how your experiments end, Sun Eater.
When you bore of your next world, you will break it like you seek to break this one, like a child who has lost interest in a toy.
Insolence!
The single words struck her harder than any statement before. Wounds opened on her skin, bubbling with black tar-like fluid. Still, she didn't scream. She tore away the next bar.
Almost enough.
Destroying yourself will serve no purpose.
Her eyes searched the void. There was no sign of her enemy there, so she looked inward.
Won't it, though?
Her jaw tensed.
You know how my abilities function. Even if I chose to serve you, the moment the next season came, I would change. And Venora would never surrender. Venshara least of all. So there's another reason you want me alive. You have something going that requires keeping me here for a long time. I don't intend to give it to you.
She tore another bar free. The pain and exertion were maddening, but now she saw a way to flee. That endless void. She didn't know what would happen if she immersed herself in it. Perhaps her existence would end in an instant. Perhaps she would float, helpless, within that void. In a best case, perhaps she'd survive and find a way to navigate through it. Void was not one of her dominions, but it was not impossible to shape. Or perhaps she'd find a place where it was thin enough to call upon the stars or the power within her.
You must not do this. If you persist in this foolishness, my true self.
Then Lyra stepped into the void. Never before had the winter felt cold. Her body slowed, beginning to freeze, but beyond the bars she sensed something, a flicker of distant power. The void was not the only force suppressing her abilities. The prison itself had been. She had mere moments to work before her mind and body ceased to function. And so, she latched on to that distant force, the vaguest light of a faraway star, and hurled her spirit toward it with all of her might. In that moment, Vendria shattered into pieces. Then Lyra opened her eyes. She was in a library. Not one of Ionel's, though. An unfamiliar one with strange white stone architecture.
Where?
Something burned in her mind, a jolt of agony.
Return to your cage!
There was a flash of blackness, pain. Her knees buckled, her eyes fluttered. As she began to fall, someone caught her arm and steadied her. Then Lyra blinked. Her eyes turned upward. A spectacled woman with a stern expression was looking at her. Her scarlet hair was pulled upward into a neat bun, the kind she might not have found strange for a librarian to have. But no librarian she knew of wore glimmering silvery armor or an arming sword on their left hip.
Ionel?
She asked. Had enough time passed that he had changed his manifestation so?
I'm Lydia Hastings. I'm in your mind, or perhaps you're in mine. We're sharing for a bit. Forgive me for the intrusion.
She didn't smile, but there was something in the woman's matter-of-fact tone and demeanor that she could appreciate.
A sorceress, then?
Then Lyra frowned.
I'm sorry. I don't know what is happening.
Return to your...
Lydia pressed her fingers against Venlyra's forehead, and the voice, that terrible, all-encompassing voice, fell silent. For the first time in... How long had it been? The voice had ceased to scream in her thoughts, and along with it, her mind began to clear. Lydia helped haul her to her feet.
You must not stay here,
Venlyra explained, as knowledge and memory began to flow into her.
It is not safe. I've been touched by the Sun Eater.
Lydia nodded in understanding.
I believe I can assist you with that problem. You have a cure, then? Has one been found?
Venlyra's eyes searched the library, intuitively scanning for relevant books nearby. There were many books on the shelves, but she couldn't read the writing on the spines. Perhaps they were in a foreign language, but the more likely reason was that they were merely figments of the dreamscape, representations of knowledge, not true books. That was rather disappointing.
Not a cure, no. But you are not infected in the traditional fashion. You have been separated from your other aspects, and I have one of them, Venora, with me. She is not afflicted as you are.
Then Lyra processed that.
Separated? The void. When I attempted to reach beyond it, I must have... Ah.
She nodded.
Fascinating.
Oh, I believe I understand your intent. You believe you can reunite me with her?
That is the eventual plan, yes. Would you be willing to...
The room around them darkened.
Are you seeing that?
Lydia asked.
He's coming.
Then Lyra drew in a breath.
We haven't much time. You should separate your mind from my own as quickly as possible.
Lydia wrinkled her nose.
I think not. We are in a shared mindscape. I will fight this infestation along with you. You don't understand. He...
You were warned.
Agony shot through every inch of her existence. She stumbled, and this time Lydia stumbled as well. But when Lydia was afflicted, Van Lyra saw a flicker of sparks in the air around her. Some sort of defensive spell, then? Was that even possible in a mindscape like this?
Ah.
Lydia's jaw tensed, her eyes searching the area.
I believe I understand now.
Lydia snapped her fingers.
Sorceress shield, mental barrier, comprehensive barrier.
The air around Lydia glimmered with each phrase. Then she reached down and touched Van Lyra's head again.
Sorceress shield, mental barrier.
Van Lyra's head swam as the second effect took hold on her. The voice in her mind quieted once again, but she could already feel it scraping against the walls of the shield.
Your sorcery is most impressive, Lydia Hastings, but it would still be wise for you to withdraw. If the infestation cannot assault us internally, I believe it will manifest in our shared mindscape more directly.
Lydia helped Van Lyra steady herself again, then pulled her hand away and reached for the sword at her hip.
I understand. I'm counting on it. You will be at great risk. If he wins, your mind is likely to be subsumed, as mine has been, for entirely too long.
Lydia smiled.
I accept the risks. Why? You do not know me?
The red-haired woman shook her head.
Irrelevant. You are being tortured and controlled by an external entity. It is my duty and honor to assist you.
When Van Lyra heard those words, she heard something she had not felt in a very long time. Resolve. It was one of her defining qualities once. Now she felt like just a withered husk of what she once was, incapable of such certainty. But with Lydia beside her, their minds in this shared place, perhaps she could borrow a bit of that strength and make it her own. She had little time to find that resolve. The world around them continued to darken, with lines of blackness appearing across the ground and collecting into a single terrifying figure. The creature was a twisted mockery of the human form, standing half again her height with spindly limbs and a jaw containing far too many vicious teeth. His hands were eight-fingered claws, his head dotted with horns, and he had bat-like wings and a spiked tail. Though the creature seemed to be formed from shadows, his body became more solid with each passing moment. Darkness rippled like water, forming plate-like scales on the creature's body, which rapidly became more rigid. Van Lyra tried not to tremble as she looked upon him. Her memories of the creature were fragmented, but she knew this was the entity that had stolen her mind and power for centuries. Not the shapeshifter, but rather the being that had lived within the dagger that had pierced her other body.
If you will not respond to my commands, perhaps I have allowed your consciousness to persist too long. A more direct approach may be warranted.
The creature opened his hands, and two spheres of black fire floated above them. Lydia smiled, adjusting her glasses.
I'm glad you're here. I was hoping you'd show yourself directly. That simplifies this process considerably.
Fool. I am the Sun Eater, creator, and destroyer.
Lydia shook her head.
I'm sorry. You can't actually believe I'm going to fall for that, are you? A true deity wouldn't need to be riding around inside Van Lyra's mind like this. You're just another shade, a figment, nothing more.
The creature growled.
I am more than a mere shade, human. While I may not represent the fullness of the Sun Eater's strength, I am a part of him. I am Amrak, eighth and strongest of his fragments. And when I take your body and leave this place, I will be one with him once again, and he will learn.
A blast of light hit Amrak from behind. He spun around, hissing, and hurled both blasts of flame toward the direction of his attacker. The black fire found only a hovering book, which floated out of the way of the flames. Amrak spun back toward Van Lyra and Lydia, readying another blast of fire, but Lydia was already speaking.
Theus's introduction to protection sorcery.
A book floated off a bookshelf to hover behind her, then glowed brightly. As Emrak hurled another blast of darkness, the book glowed brighter and a shimmering blue barrier appeared around Lydia. The barrier shattered, but the blast was diminished enough that it failed when it hit Lydia's second barrier, which she'd formed around herself earlier. Lydia waved, and another book flew off a nearby shelf. Hardigan's Essential Guide to Flame Calling. The book opened, and a white-hot blast of flame leapt out of the pages. Emrak hissed, jumping to the side and avoiding the flames, only to be blasted again with a bolt of light from the book that still hovered behind him. Emrak howled, slamming his palms together. The floor of the room began to crack.
Your parlor tricks are infuriating, but they will not last for long. I will annihilate this place, and you along with it.
Lydia pointed to the ground.
Theus's Art of Structural Reinforcement.
Another book flew off a shelf, opened, and pressed itself against the library floor. It vanished, and the cracks in the library vanished along with it. The earthquake ceased. The attacking books continued to barrage the shadow with fire and light, and Emrak raised his arms to defend himself. Then Lyra was done simply watching the exchange. She'd been idle for far, far too long. As Emrak finally managed to blast the light-throwing book out of the air with a burst of shadow, Ben Lyra conjured a rain of frozen spikes above him. The lances of frost flew downward and pierced the shadow's body, pinning him to the ground. Emrak trembled, then shifted into a liquid state. The inky pool flowed along the floor, then reformed into Emrak right in front of them.
Fools!
Emrak grabbed Lydia by her throat, reaching straight through the barrier around her and smashing her into a nearby bookcase.
I understand your tricks now. Your conceptualization of this place as a library has given you flexibility, but not power. And in this world, power dictates all.
Lydia coughed, struggling to tear free from the hand around her neck. After a moment of failing to speak, Lydia's eyes widened.
Ah. I understand. Speech isn't necessary here. Choking me accomplishes nothing.
A book floated off a nearby shelf.
Terran's The Nature of Worlds.
Lydia vanished from Emrak's grip. Emrak spun just in time for Ven Lyra to press a hand into his chest.
Stop!
Ice covered the monster's body. The ice began to shake almost immediately as Emrak began to break free. Lydia appeared again at Ven Lyra's side, or rather, her sides. There were three copies of Lydia now, each holding out a hand toward the frozen shade.
Eru vola Shentaris!
Blasts of blue-white flame engulfed the ice and shadow alike. The creature within howled and writhed. As the ice melted, Emrak began to burn, parts of him vanishing into nothingness. Emrak screamed and the environment changed. In an instant, the library was gone. They stood on a handful of gray stone tiles that hovered within a seemingly infinite void. The darkness around them was oppressive, omnipresent. It was the darkness Ven Lyra had seen in her mind for centuries that she had screamed into without effect. And as she watched, the few stone tiles they stood on began to fade. Two of Lydia's copies vanished, leaving only a single one, and an oppressive pressure manifested in the air. Emrak in front of them changed and twisted, growing larger and larger.
Human, you have fought well, but it is at an end.
The force around them intensified, pushing Ven Lyra and Lydia downward. Lydia's barrier spells manifested around them both, but it only dampened the effect. They were barely able to remain standing. Emrak smashed a huge fist into Lydia's chest, sending her flying back across the tiles. Ven Lyra moved a hand and raised a wall of ice, blocking Lydia from falling into the void. Lydia began to push herself back to her feet, but the air continued to push downward on both her and Ven Lyra, making movement difficult. And all the while, the darkness grew.
This is my true strength, mortal. You cannot stand against it alone.
Emrak raised a hand and Lydia floated off the ground. A burst of force slammed her against the wall of ice, leaving cracks in the frozen surface. Lydia coughed on the impact. Ven Lyra fired a blast of icy knives at Emrak, but they shattered harmlessly when they impacted against him. Emrak drew back an arm. The arm shifted into the shape of a spear, and it aimed for Lydia's heart and lunged. Lydia didn't move. Instead, she closed her eyes. A many-faceted green barrier appeared around her, deflecting the strike.
Who said anything about being alone?
Lydia struggled, blood flowing from her mouth and nose. She resisted the force of Emrak's pressure, pushing herself away from the ice wall and raised her hand again. The glimmering barrier compressed, forming a shimmering field of green energy around her body. Then Lyra stared at the barrier in shock. She knew that technique. She'd seen it many times in fragmented memories of her mind. It belonged to one of her other selves.
Venora? I am here, Venlyra. How? Why?
Lydia pointed her finger at the titanic shadow again, and wisps of blue flame appeared around it. The flames grew brighter and brighter with each passing moment. The shadow struck her again, cracking her green barrier and hitting Lydia hard in the chest. She coughed, stumbled back a step, and then steadied herself. And still, Lydia's flames grew brighter.
It would seem this one wishes to save us, Venlyra. She must flee this place. She cannot succeed.
The shadow lashed out with a lance-like arm, this time piercing through Lydia's barriers entirely. She twisted just in time to avoid a lethal blow, but a vast hole appeared in her left shoulder. She staggered, gritting her teeth. Still, her flames glowed brighter.
She can, and she will, if we help her. He's too strong.
The shadow's lance came down again. This time, Lydia was too slow to dodge. She didn't have to. A wall of ice appeared in the way of the lance-like appendage, blocking the strike. As the shadow reared back for another attack, Venlyra conjured more spikes of frost and hurled them toward Emrak's chest.
We are stronger. Together.
The spikes flashed green, glowing with inner light. This time they pierced deep into Emrak's shadowy form, leaving wounds that bled inky fluid. Emrak screamed, reaching for the largest of the shards and trying to pull it from his chest. Lydia took that moment to strike. She vanished, reappearing in midair in front of Emrak and placed a gleaming hand against the shadow's forehead.
Be gone, monster!
There was a flash of white from Lydia's ring. Then a sphere of purest white flame enveloped Lydia and Emrak, exploding outward and consuming everything in its wake. The darkness around them cracked. When Venlyra's vision cleared, they stood not in the darkness, but atop a mountainside. Lydia was lying on the ground, her right arm badly burned, and her chest still bleeding from the terrible wound she had suffered. And standing above her, with a black dagger raised, was a hideous mockery of Tysus. His face was burned half away, showing a blackened skull beneath. Black fluid dribbled from a massive hole in his chest, but even now, his body was beginning to repair itself.
You have harmed me.
The false Tysus shuddered, the skull half of his face hideously contorting along with his skin.
But I will end this. I will end you in the same way that it all began.
He brought his dagger down to strike, but as his hand descended, an arm grabbed him from behind.
Venora.
Venlyra had never seen her spring aspect in person before, only in images drawn by others. Her skin was the color of bark, and her hair a mixture of green and brown. And more importantly, her fists were currently glowing with green light.
You will not harm her.
Venora's fist slammed into the Tysus, cracking his unnatural jaw. He stumbled backward from the strength of the blow, but quickly righted himself.
You are a fool to show yourself here,
he hissed.
I will take you as well.
No!
Spears of ice shot up from the ground, piercing the shadow's legs. Venlyra stepped forward.
You imprisoned me.
She raised a hand, conjuring a wall of ice to surround the cage.
Suppressed me.
The cage began to fill with water.
Stole my body.
Inside, the trapped form of Tysus bashed against the wall of ice, making wide cracks.
Stole my life.
She propelled herself forward as the cage finished filling with water, then pressed a hand against the cracked icy wall.
Now face your punishment. Stop. Forever.
The water inside the cage froze, and within it, the shadow stilled. Venora stepped to the side of the frozen cage, placing a hand on it. A wall of stone formed around the ice, then a layer of wood formed and hardened around the stone. Then Lyra looked to Venora.
It is done, then.
Venora nodded.
It is, save for one thing.
Then they walked to Lydia's wounded form and knelt beside her. She lay unmoving in a still-growing puddle of blood.
She has given too much for us. Her mind, spirit, and essence are in tatters.
They placed their hands on her together, then nodded to each other.
We will repay our debt.
And with that, they began to work in unison. Chapter 19. Jonan, 5. Wounded by a thorn. Jonan was a few hundred yards away from the crescent thorn when Velis appeared in front of him, just as expected. He caught her as she stumbled, careful not to impale himself on the Heartlands in the process. Velis trembled for a moment, then pulled free from his grasp.
Kestrian!
She stumbled away from him, then caught herself with the spear.
We need to get back there. Now!
He put a hand on her shoulder.
No!
Velis spun around, batting away his hand with her only functional one.
Riala! She's badly hurt. We need to go.
Jonan shook his head, reaching up to tap the earring he was wearing.
Heard the whole thing. We're leaving. You're in no shape to fight, and I'm not a fighter.
No, no, no.
Velis shook her head.
She took a knife to the chest, Kestrian. She's dying. We need to go now.
Velis took a step away from him, turned, and started heading back toward the building. She leaned heavily on the Heartlands, careful not to put any pressure on her injured ankle.
You're insane.
Jonan walked in front of her.
Stop! You'll just get us both killed too!
She wasn't dead, Jonan,
Velis snarled.
If we go now, we might—
What are you going to do? Bleed on the other silk?
Jonan folded his arms.
Do not press me right now, Kestrian. I'm not in a pleasant mood.
She tilted her head down and gave him her best glower, but it was somewhat less intimidating than usual, given that she could barely stay on her feet.
If the Shrouded One wants her dead, she'll be dead long before we get there. If she wants her alive, we're just presenting extra targets right now. We stand no chance. Come with me. We'll get you healed, and we'll go rescue her together. Later. I...
Bella stared toward the Crescent Thorn, wavering.
I can't just leave her like this. She saved me, Jonan. She...
Bella's bit her lip, turning away.
I thought she was the other silk. I didn't trust her. I didn't talk to her. If I'd believed in her, if I'd shared my plans, if we'd gone together from the start, maybe.
She looked like she was on the verge of tears. Jonan was momentarily stymied by that, given that he'd never seen her with extreme emotions of that kind, and also because he was generally awful with people. After a moment, he reached over, patted her on the cheek, and said,
"Please don't get me killed with sentiment."
Velis stared at him incredulously for a moment, then snorted.
You never change, do you?
Dying would constitute a change. An unwanted change.
Can we go?
She took one ragged breath, then nodded.
Right. We're going now.
He put an arm under her other shoulder, grimacing at the look of her broken wrist, and helped her limp toward the nearest alley. From there, it was a very long, painful walk to the blacksmith shop, where help was hopefully waiting.
Oh, dear.
Aladir took one look at Velis, grimaced, then gestured at the floor.
You can lie her down. I'll need to get to work immediately.
What, I don't even get a chair? What sort of doctor are you?
Velis grumbled.
It's much harder to work on you while you're sitting. I do wish I'd prepared a better environment for this, but...
He gave her a sheepish look.
It is what it is.
Married Kaelin sat nearby in the one and only chair within the shop, sitting next to a line of weapons. An excellent position, in Jonan's judgment, for grabbing something to murder them all while they were in a vulnerable position on the floor. Jonan went and leaned up against the wall near the weapons.
Where's your commanding officer?
He knew better than to use Tervis's name when non-Thorngard were present. Aladir was nominally working with them at the moment, but that didn't mean they were going to share everything with him.
Busy? Merid offered him a strained smile. Mind explaining all this?
Perhaps later, Jonan smiled.
For now, let's let the doctor work in peace.
No, it's quite all right. Talk away.
Aladir was inspecting Velis's wrist.
I won't be bothered.
Jonan was not an expert on healing, but he was reasonably certain that you weren't supposed to distract someone while they were working.
Is he trying to get us to say something while he's around?
How uncharacteristically sneaky for a paladin.
No wonder he's Lydia's partner.
After several minutes, which were mostly filled with Aladir talking to himself, Jonan came to the conclusion that while Aladir was probably being sneaky, he was also just extremely talkative. Touch of life. Aladir's hands glowed green as he touched Velis's wrist. He'd already physically adjusted the bones in her wrist, then used a different spell to force them to begin mending more quickly. Jonan hadn't watched. The sight was a little too disturbing.
That should be it for the wrist for the moment. Don't use it, of course. I'll need to clean this off, then work on your ankle and burns.
Velis groaned.
Hurry! I need to get back out there.
Absolutely not. You shouldn't be fighting again for at least 3 days.
Jonan suspected they'd be lucky to keep Velis from rushing out for 3 more minutes if they didn't do something to placate her. While she was clearly hurting more now that the adrenaline of battle had fled, there was no chance she would be willing to just sit around and wait while her friend was in danger.
How many paladins do we have available, Aladir?
She asked.
Married raised an eyebrow but said nothing.
Not many in this city, I'm afraid. Lydia could call on more, but she's heading toward...
He glanced at Married and Jonan, then back to Velis.
That other place now.
Get her back here. We have our target.
Married's look of concern intensified, but again, she remained silent.
You can tell me all about it in the morning, after you've rested.
No. Tonight. Now. Get Lydia back here before it's too late.
Aladir frowned, finishing cleaning her wrist and moving down to work on her leg.
I have no way of doing that.
I can send Lydia a message, Jonan offered. Aladir gave him a look.
One that I provide?
Certainly. I believe we all have the same goal. He was absolutely not certain that they had the same goal. In fact, he was rapidly having to evaluate if he even knew his own goal. The conversation between Velis and the Shrouded One had been interesting. Interesting in the sense that it was awful, even more so than he'd anticipated.
There's zero chance that Ayara didn't already know the Shrouded One's identity. That means she deliberately pitted her 2 current apprentices against her old one. She'd probably planned for some of us to die in that conflict. I'm not sure who she expected to lose, or if she even cared.
He continued to worry about that for the next hour while Aladir finished his work. After that, Aladir wrote a letter, which Jonan sent to Lydia via mirror, and they parted ways for the night.
Married, I'll fill you in tomorrow. Velis, let's get you somewhere safe.
Should you be moving anywhere tonight?
Married asked.
You can just sleep here. It's not comfortable, but it might be safer.
Jonan shook his head.
Can't. We have places to be, resources to work on. Thank you, though.
Married nodded.
Be safe, then.
Velis gave Married an odd look, then nodded in return.
You as well. Thanks for the shelter.
With that, Jonan and Velis left the shop and headed back out into the night.
We're going for Riala now.
No, we're not. This argument continued while they headed to a different safe house that Jonan had prepared, just in case they were being followed. He hid them while they walked with both invisibility and illusionary duplicates, but if the Shrouded One was following them directly, he knew it wouldn't be effective. Eventually, they made it to the safe house, and Jonan opened it up and let them inside. They checked through the building, ensuring it was actually unoccupied before Jonan finally dismissed his illusions, sighed, and sat down on yet another dusty and long-abandoned couch.
You're awfully reticent to help someone who needs us, Jonan folded his arms. You're injured. I'm useless. We're waiting for help. What sort of help?
Velis sat down on the floor, wincing.
Life sorcery was accelerating her healing process, but it hadn't fixed all of the damage.
I requested some assistance from Velthrin a few days ago. Velthrin? That could take weeks!
Jonan shook his head.
It's been expedited, and it should be ready soon. And it'll be useful.
I have a plan to get us close to the Shrouded One without raising too many suspicions.
She knows me now. It's a little late for that.
He shook his head.
No, this will probably work, unless she knows me on sight.
Velis frowned.
She very well might. She knew who I was. She said she'd killed a Velis Jaldan before, whatever that means.
Any mysterious grandmothers missing in your family history?
Not that I'm aware of. I didn't think I was named after any predecessor. And, she hesitated for a moment, I'm not really a Jaldan anyway. I was adopted.
That's awkward. Was Velisa's name in those books? I don't remember seeing her in there.
Jonan shrugged. So was I, if you count Ayara's pulling me out of a burning home. Do you think what she said had some significance? Don't know. Might have just been a simple intimidation trick, she frowned. But one way or another, it shows she had an information source about me. She both knew my name, and she knew to be waiting there for me. Who could have told her?
It wasn't me, before you ask, he frowned. And I doubt it was Lydia or Aladir.
Married, then?
Jonan nodded. A likely suspect, or her commanding officer, Tervis. But I don't necessarily think someone told her.
Not in the sense we're thinking. You're talking about those books you've been reading. The ones that mention the future.
It may sound absurd, but if the leader of this cult is a Vaykas, and she had another Vaykas working for her, the plausibility of someone who can accurately foresee the future being involved is vastly higher than I would have thought before.
You think there's something as minute as my position on a rooftop in those books?
Not in the books, but if someone, like the Shrouded One herself, can see the future, they might be able to catch glimpses of things like that. Your paladin friend can do things like that, can't she?
Asphodel's predictive abilities were unreliable when I was training with her. She also used to have trouble seeing me with her future sight at all. But maybe that's changed. I've heard she's gotten better. And I suppose if a Vaykas has that ability, and she's been training for hundreds of years...
Velis sighed.
How do you beat someone like that? How can we even try? She could be years ahead of us in planning.
I don't think so. Jonan shook his head. I mean, maybe she's planned for some things that far out, but the moment-to-moment actually sounds harder. You seemed to hurt her at some point somehow.
Velis frowned. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure exactly what happened there.
Start from the beginning. I heard a lot, but tell me in your own words. We should gather everything we can about the fight so we can strategize.
Right,
Velis nodded, winced again, then steeled herself.
So first I landed on the rooftop.
They met with Aladir again the next morning at a different house, judging that moving frequently was wise now that the older Silk was aware of Velis being present in the city. I've sent the message you requested, Aladir, but she hasn't replied.
Aladir gave a nod.
Her current task could take some time.
Velis tightened her jaw.
We're going without her, then. I'm not waiting any longer to get Riala out of there.
Jonan glanced at Velis, considering before he replied. Ordinarily, I'd urge us to wait. But Lydia wouldn't be able to help with my current plan anyway. And I don't think it's worth waiting for any other approach. More honestly, he couldn't take the risk of Talion and Lydia retrieving the mask from Kaestri before he finished his own assignment. While discovering that the Shrouded One was the original Silk was something, it wasn't a complete answer. Ayara would want a name, and he didn't have that. That meant he was, unfortunately, going to have to take a risk. Failing Ayara was simply not an option. Rescuing Riala quickly would be an added bonus, if it was possible. But while Jonan had many illusions, believing it was likely Riala had survived was not among them. Fortunately, his preparations were finally complete. He hadn't heard from Lydia, but he had received a different message in the morning. It's done. Both deaths have been confirmed. Scour. Jonan's contact in Velthrin had finished his assignment, and it was time to move on to the next phase of the plan. Aladir looked to Jonan, then to Velis.
You should wait here. I'll accompany Master Kestrian for whatever this plan is,
Velis snorted.
Not likely. I'm itching for a rematch.
You're not in any shape for one. Even after my healing, you've only had one night of rest.
What? And you think you do any better? You're a medic. Velis scowled.
I'm a paladin. A paladin who happens to have life sorcery in addition to other skills.
He raised his hand and the thin wooden bracelet on his wrist glowed. A moment later, a gleaming sword appeared in his right hand, the hilt designed to look like the trunk of a tree.
We knew we might be running into a Vaykas up here. We came prepared for Sterling, but I suspect this will work equally well against a different one. And Riala is my friend, too.
A fancy Dominion-bonded sword isn't going to help you if you can't see her move.
I'm handling this.
Velis leaned forward.
That's enough bickering,
Jonan interjected. Velis blinked in surprise.
I have roles for you both to play.
Aladir frowned.
Go on. I listened to your idea at least, but you're not my commanding officer.
Jonan nodded.
I'll explain the plan. I think you'll find the odds are better than a direct assault, but there are some risks.
An hour later, Jonan and Aladir arrived at the back entrance of the Crescent Thorn, dragging a large cart. The cart carried two coffins, one of which was abnormally large. A pair of guards stopped them at the door, of course. It was broad daylight, and they weren't concealing their movements.
Who goes?
Vincent Calloway and Lyris Luria. We've just completed an important assignment and need to make a report.
One of the guards paled.
Lyris Luria? As in House Luria? My apologies, I didn't recognize you.
That was unfortunate, since Jonan thought his illusion that made Aladir look like Lyris Luria, or Eridus, as he'd been called back in Velthrin, was quite convincing. Aladir smiled brightly.
No need to be concerned, friend. I've been out of the city until recently, doing some work for an important cause.
He gave the guard a conspiratorial look.
I understand. Please, wait here. I'll need to check some things. Of course. We wouldn't want any mistakes to be made about something this important.
The guard hurried off. A few minutes later, they were being escorted inside, wagon and all. A few minutes after that, they found themselves in a small room standing across from a masked and hooded figure.
Flower mask, Jonan remembered. Although it could easily be a different person wearing the same mask I saw before.
I've been told you have a delivery,
the hooded figure asked.
Yes, the same one I mentioned previously. It needs to go directly to the Shrouded One, however, for immediate authentication.
The hooded figure leaned forward.
What makes you think I'm not the Shrouded One? You could be, but you don't match the description Sterling gave me,
Aladir offered.
From your outfit, I'd wager you're one of the council members that's been sent to screen us. That's fine. You can look in the crates and verify a delivery first, but we're going to need to take it straight to the top after that.
Flower Mask gave a curt nod.
I'll inspect them first.
They waved a hand and a glimmering barrier appeared around them before they moved to the cart. A sensible precaution.
You said these were...
Jonan waved to the coffin.
Nakane and Larkin Theus. Last two on the House Theus list. Page 374.
Flower Mask nodded.
I'm familiar, and I recall our previous discussion.
He turned toward Aladir.
You were the one originally responsible for this, yes? These deliveries are significantly late. I ran into some difficulties.
Aladir sounded sheepish.
You were captured.
Flower Mask shook his head.
You have much to answer for.
Aladir's eyes narrowed.
Don't get snippy with me. I work for Sterling, not for you. And the job is done. That remains to be seen.
The figure stepped forward, opening the first coffin, and immediately stepped back with a hand over his face.
Sorry, I should have warned you about the smell. Neither of us is a stability sorcerer, so...
The hooded figure slammed the first coffin shut, then moved to the next.
That one isn't as bad, Jonan offered helpfully. Nakane was a little more intact than her cousin.
Flower Mask opened the coffin, stared inside for a moment, and then shut it again.
She's older than I remembered.
You've met her?
The surprise in Jonan's tone was sincere. Flower Mask nodded.
Reconnaissance for the upcoming citywide event. Continuity checks. You've done well to correct this mistake. It was one of the most serious problems with the scenario. This should reduce the probability that fate has been twisted beyond repair.
Jonan thought he understood most of that, but he didn't like the implications.
Come this way.
Flower Mask led them to a spiral stairway.
The Shrouded One will see you on the top floor. Ah, I'm afraid that getting that cart up the stairs might be somewhat difficult, however. Do you need some help?
Jonan looked at the cart and the stairs, grimacing.
We can handle it, thank you,
Aladir answered. Flower Mask watched them for just another moment, then nodded and walked away.
Good luck. You'd best hope she's in a good mood.
Jonan took a deep breath.
Honestly, I'm not even sure we'll survive making it up the stairs.
Dragging the cart up the stairwell was predictably tremendously awkward. It took several minutes just to get to the top floor, and that was with Aladir cheating and using some kind of levitation spell to help. When they reached the top, they found a pair of bright red double doors waiting for them. There were no guards outside.
"Come in,"
a voice said from the opposite side.
"It's unlocked."
Aladir and Jonan exchanged glances, then dragged the cart toward the doors. Aladir pushed the doors wide as they approached. The room ahead was huge and ostentatious. The walls were white stone, but draped with numerous banners and paintings. Four high stone pillars led to the angled ceiling, and toward the back of the room, Jonan could see a small stairwell leading to a trapdoor that presumably led to the roof. None of that was immediately important, however. Crimson carpet led across the room to end at a golden throne. Sitting on that throne was Silk, or at least someone who looked very much like her, the Shrouded One. It should have been so obvious. She was perhaps a bit shorter than Velis, however, and even lighter in build. Little more could be seen beneath the veils, however. Potent sight sorcery blocked any attempts to gaze at the person within. Jonan probably could have broken or bypassed that effect, but it would have been tricky to accomplish at a distance, and it would have been noticeable to everyone if he tried.
"You can bring that straight to me,"
the Shrouded One waved at them, holding a scepter shaped like a long-stemmed rose. Jonan and Aladir dragged the wagon forward.
"The delivery, as promised," Jonan bowed his head. "If there's nothing else, stay," the Shrouded One commanded. "If you've actually completed this piece of the grand work, you should be rewarded after all."
"Ah, many thanks." Jonan took a step away from the wagon. The Shrouded One approached, then paused, turning her head toward Jonan.
"You sound familiar. Virgil, was it?"
"Vincent," Jonan corrected, trying not to sound too nervous.
Perhaps you saw me at Fort Caldry?"
"She was there visiting Captain Nolan, so maybe."
"Ah, yes. That must have been it."
She snapped her fingers.
"My, this coffin is quite large."
"Larkin was wearing full armor," Jonan explained. "We felt it was best to preserve the body with all the equipment."
"Prudent."
She walked closer, reaching for the coffin.
"I'll see. By the gods, what is that smell?"
Jonan winced. "Decomposition, I'm afraid. We didn't have someone with stability sorcery."
"Ugh."
She pulled her hand away.
"And the other one?"
"Not quite as bad, at least." The Shrouded One groaned, then moved and opened the other coffin.
"Hmm. Nikonotheus, is it? Interesting."
She took a few steps closer to Jonan.
"You've done very well."
Jonan resisted the urge to flinch away.
"Thank you, Shrouded One." "She's so close."
Her veils were floating inches away from him, almost within reach.
"I'm quite impressed that you did such a service to the cause."
The Shrouded One stepped closer.
"Tell me, what inspired you to go to such efforts?"
She leaned in, her draping silks brushed against Jonan's shoulder. A moment of concentration and a single thought was all it took for Jonan to brush past their sorcery and see within them. And in that moment, he realized his mistake. She was right in front of him. That dark hair, those burning eyes, that awful smile. The same smile she'd worn when she'd burned his family to ashes.
"Lavender,"